Let's call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:45 p.m. It's Wednesday, April 10, 2024. Before we begin, I want to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Dylan Williams from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Senator Kaufman, Senator Tobin, Senator Kia, my vice chair, and myself, Senator Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is Senate Bill 258, Criminal Convictions Overturned, Received Past Permanent Fund Dividends, sponsored by Senate State Affairs Committee. This is the second hearing of the bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Our office did not receive any amendments by our amendment deadline. Before looking to the will of the committee, I will see if Senator Kawasaki's office has any closing comments. Nope. Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none, Senator Keel, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Judiciary Committee report Senate Bill 258, Work Order 33 LS 1477/A, as in Anchorage, from committee with individual recommendations and attached to zero fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, the bill moves from committee. I would ask committee members to sign the paperwork. We'll pass it around as we begin our next presentation. Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Our next and last order of business today is Senate Bill 255, Obstruction of Public Places Trespassing, sponsored by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the governor. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here to present the bill, I believe, is our Attorney General, Treg Taylor. Mr. Taylor, if you would please come forward, identify yourself for the record. And I see you're bringing Parker Patterson, Senior Assistant Attorney General, as well. And I would note also online available for questions, we have from the Department of Public Safety, Lieutenant Robert French, I believe Andy Mills, Special Assistant to the Commissioner of Public Transportation, Dan Shocker, Northern Region Maintenance Operation Manager, Daniel Pratt, Chief Fairbanks Airport Fire and Police, and Aaron Danielson, Chief of Anchorage Airport Fire and Police. And who's up first?
All right, Chair Klayman, this is Trey Taylor, the Attorney General. Appreciate the opportunity, Chair Klayman, and the members of this committee to present to you SB 2255, walk through what it does, what it doesn't do, and sort of give you an overview of that. If we could move to the next slide. So this is about a little, this bill is a balancing act of sorts. It balances the constitutional right, the freedom to move about the state and to access public places with the constitutional right of freedom of assembly and of freedom to protest. And so we've looked at the issues, we've seen what's going on around the world and around the lower 48, and we've done our best to sort of balance those two constitutional rights. First is freedom to move.
One quick question. You raised the topic by your those introductions about what's going on around the world and the other states. Are any of the events you're talking about that you're describing, have any of those occurred in Alaska?
Not to the extent that we're seeing in Lower 48. So this is a relatively newer phenomenon. At least we're getting a lot more press coverage of it. Whether it's a new phenomenon or not, I don't know. But certainly awareness of these types of protests and the destruction and the economic harm that can occur is at the forefront of people's minds at the moment. So the freedom of movement here, Alaskans have the right to freely move within the state. And if their public roads and public places are unlawfully obstructed, that right is infringed. Right now, unlawful obstruction presents a threat to public safety, obviously for reasons that emergency personnel can't get from point A to point B, or people that are in need of care cannot get from point A to point B. And then unlawful obstruction poses a threat to Alaska's economy, and I'll sort of go through some scenarios where that could occur here later in the slide to give you an illustration of just the kind of economic harm that can occur. And then the bill imposes additional criminal penalties for obstruction of public places, which is not currently a crime. And it gives a creates a civil cause of action or for a private citizen to take action if they're harmed in any way by the obstruction. So this bill is really an attempt to discourage some of the practices that we are seeing to kind of keep those from occurring before the harm can occur. Freedom of assembly, obviously a longstanding constitutional right. Highways, roadways, inaccessible or impassable is already a crime. What this bill does is just increase that penalty to sort of act as further discouragement to this type of behavior. Freedom of expression is already subject to time, place, and manner restrictions to prevent interference with the rights of others. And so, like I said, this bill attempts to balance those two constitutional rights, freedom of assembly and freedom to move about. The proposed bill targets the conduct of blocking access to public places and is not targeting Alaskans' right to peacefully and lawfully assemble. Provides Alaskans an avenue to remedy against unlawful obstruction. Again, this is the obstruction of public places is currently, there is no remedy currently in the books. And so this is an attempt to keep those types of obstructions from escalating into violence. One of the problems that we're seeing around the world is that there's no real remedy against these individuals. And in fact, the remedy right now in Alaska is a violation, which is a $1,000 fine, but it's not an arrestable offense. And so one of the objects of this bill is to be able to have police officers remove the obstruction. And by creating an arrestable offense, you enable officers to remove an obstruction. And we've seen protesters block traffic at the State of the Union address in Washington, D.C. We've also seen Trump supporters use their cars to block access to a bridge in New York. We're seeing this more and more, including in Virginia, where protesters, pro-Palestinian protesters, blocked an interstate. And so it's only a matter of time, I think, before we see this in Alaska, especially given the environment that we are in Alaska and people's desire to protect Alaska from environmental damage and environmental harm, and then their zeal to do so. I think we could easily see one of these scenarios that I'm about to discuss play out. These types of illegal protests could have a devastating impact on Alaska. We're different than Lower 48. There is sometimes only one way to get from point A to point B. And so, example, if you struck the Seward Highway south of Anchorage, you could block access to the Kenai Peninsula from the Port of Alaska and from Tent Stevens International Airport. And even a momentary we're talking a blockage of several hours could cause significant economic harm and harm to others, as we've seen from just vehicle crashes that block that traffic for that amount of time. In the Glen Highway is another example. Obstructing Glen Highway north of Anchorage blocks every community north of Anchorage from accessing the Port of Alaska and Ted Stevens International Airport. Another area of concern, Dalton Highway, one way to get a vehicle up to the North Slope. And so obstructing the haul road during mobilization season could be devastating to the producers in the north of Alaska. Another example, Highway 2, obstructing the road just inside the U.S.-Canada border blocks all road traffic in and out of Alaska. And you can easily see how just a half a day in the pileup of motorhomes waiting to proceed or whatever truck traffic there is, you can easily see issues with running out of fuel, running out of food, and that could be pretty devastating for those involved.
A question about under the law today, let's take an example, Highway 2, the last one you list.
Yep.
Using that situation, if somebody blocked the road today, do we have the legal mechanisms today for troopers to go and take measures to get them to remove themselves from the road so traffic can get through already?
Right now, and I might pass this to DPS here as soon as I give you an answer, Chair. But right now, it is a violation, and a fine of up to $1,000. And a violation does not allow for an arrest. And so typically, a trooper would be stuck with the determination of how do we deal with this? I can't arrest. So if I could ask DPS online to fill out that answer, that'd be
great.
That's
fine.
Okay.
I know I'm getting you off your script, but I...
No, you're fine. That's what we're here for.
Who's your choice for a DPS?
Let's see.
You want?
I'm not sure who's you had a lieutenant on.
Lieutenant Robert French online. Let me double check. Mr. Lieutenant French?
This is Lieutenant Robert French with the Alaska State Troopers in Anchorage. To the chair, I'll have to defer to the Department of Law to get more information on exactly how that situation would play out. Exactly correct with the citation issue. Getting the rest of it to move involuntarily, I'm going to have to research that. I can get back to you.
It's just been my experience, and Senator Tobin may have followed, but from what I've seen in these situations, the officer asks somebody to move the car and move themselves because it's a traffic place and somebody needs to drive through, and generally within a fairly short period of time, they convince them to move and they move. I in the example you give with the Seward Highway, I mean, I've been in that place where there was an accident, and not only was there an accident, but we figured out this was a major accident. We turned around and went back and had a long lunch and had a snack, and then finally drove down the road again, and there was no crime involved. It was just somebody had a terrible accident.
Yeah.
But I have seen circumstances where people are asked to move the road, and that's, I mean, I understand there may not be as many severe criminal penalties, but I haven't seen a setting in Alaska where they've had somebody that basically lies on the road and refuses to get out of the road for hours and hours and hours.
Right.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I actually want to dig down a little bit into that idea of penalties. Is, you know, I've done a little research since I've seen this bill in Senate Transportation, and I came across a statement from the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, that says increasing the severity of the punishment does little to deter the crime. And so I'm curious what research you might have or evidence you might have that you can provide to the committee that showcases that increasing the penalties will actually prevent these actions from happening here in Alaska.
Senator Tobin, through the chair, I think that what we've seen, and this goes to both of your sort of comments and questions, in that the inability of law enforcement to act in a lot of places throughout the U.S. and throughout the world for these types of protests. And we're trying to give law enforcement the tools to de-escalate these situations before you have a motorist that, you know, whether it's to see a kid's soccer match or whether it's to haul a bunch of produce that is now spoiling in the back of a hot truck to market. And we're trying to prevent those escalations, and this gives law enforcement the tools to do just that. And as far as the deterrent, I think any rational person is going to weigh the consequences of conduct before they act. And if there is a bigger consequence, I think that individual is going to have to weigh that. And they may choose to still go forward with it, but they also may think, well, it's probably not worth my time. I'm going to protest in a different legal manner. I'm going to apply for a permit with the municipality of Anchorage or with Juneau, and I'm going to protest there on the corner instead of try to block marine traffic in and out of Juneau.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you for that. And I do want to note that there is no way to permit a protest in state land. So obviously it would have to be on municipal within the purview of this legislation. But just to clarify, you don't have evidence or you don't have supporting documents that showcases there would be a deterrence. Or are you saying that you do have evidence?
Senator Tobin, through the chair, it's just a matter of common sense that the bigger the penalty, the more these groups will think twice about doing it. If they face big fines and they want to pay the fines, then great, they're going to still protest. But if they don't, then they're not going to protest, right? They're going to protest in a way that's legal.
Thank you. I just want to push back, because I've seen many of our individuals commit rather egregious crimes, particularly white-collar crimes, and there are incredible fines. I think there's actually a former president who's experiencing incredible crimes for inciting riots, and yet it doesn't seem to deter his actions or deter his statements. So I'm unsure if common sense actually falls into this purview, but thank you.
And I appreciate your appeal to common sense, but the joy of being in front of the Judiciary Committee is we've been hearing evidence for a long time, and we are not a death penalty state, but the most common pitch made is that, well, if you had a death penalty, then common sense people would stop killing each other. But the evidence seems to be that much of the evidence today is that the states that have a death penalty seem to have higher murder rates than the states that don't have a death penalty. I'm thankful that Alaska doesn't have a death penalty. But when you say common sense says that a higher deterrent will cause people to behave themselves differently, there's a huge amount of criminological data that suggests that that may appeal to some sense of some theory of common sense, but the statistical reality doesn't really support that statement. Yeah. I appreciate your belief in the statement, but I don't think
there's a lot. Chair Clayman, do you mind if I respond to that?
Absolutely.
Chair Clayman.
I do not mind.
I think when you're talking about these types of protests that are planned out weeks, sometimes months in advance, that are orchestrated by global organizations, that they are going to weigh the penalty and the cost of the organization for these types of protests. We're not talking about a crime of passion. We're not talking about a knee-jerk reaction, someone with a gun that pulls the trigger on someone else. We're talking about well-planned out protests by organizations that do have a ability to go into the red or go into the black, right? They are cognizant of those types of things. And so I think in this scenario, you will see hopefully a detrimental effect of discouraging those types of organizations from engaging in this type of illegal behavior in Alaska. That's the hope, right?
I'll make one response and you can respond to as, you know, I grew up in the South in the 1960s, and the groups that were protesting the injustice to African Americans, they knew the consequences. They knew they were going to jail, and their plan was to fill up the jails, and they needed to make that statement. And so when somebody says, oh, they don't want to endure the economic consequences, I'm not, again, I appreciate your perspective, but it's not very convincing from the background I come from.
Chair Clayman, as a deterrent, you're not always going to be successful, right? But we can do what we can. And I think this bill gets us to that place.
Getting the committee going, Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to give the Attorney General a chance. He talked about this being particular to planned protests, well in advance, and protests by groups. As I look through the changes in criminal law here, I don't see that requirement for these enhanced penalties or higher order offenses. Can you point me to that in the bill?
Senator Keel, through the chair, no, this is an equal opportunity bill. Anyone who engages in these types of actions, whether they are a global organization, whether they are two individuals, neighbors decided over a couple beers that they were going to block the Seward Highway, it doesn't matter. This is agnostic to cause or to policy. It is, if individuals intentionally, knowingly block traffic, they are going to be subject to these penalties.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would say that then it does apply to the crimes where someone's, I think you could say crime of passion, but someone's hot under the collar, they block the sidewalk, they block the trail to the lake, they get angry, they do the thing in hot blood as opposed to cold blood. And in fact, it does apply to those as well.
Yes.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm going to just ask for a little more clarity, because you just now said that the bill is agnostic, but in Senate Transportation, you said there would be discretion, because the way the bill is currently written, you could sue the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for blocking free and public access to a state sidewalk or an easement of that course. So which is it? Is there going to be discretion in how this is applied to individuals and to businesses, or is it agnostic in terms of how it is applied?
Senator Tobin, through the chair, the bill is agnostic as to the reason for the protest. There is always discretion when police officers respond to a call, doesn't matter what part of criminal code, there is always discretion on the officer's part. That's part of our justice system. And then that discretion then goes to the prosecuting office. When that case is referred to the prosecutor, there's discretion no matter what criminal statute they have violated. And so, and then you have the discretion of the courts as they deal with these things, and the discretion of juries whether or not they're going to implement a punishment for that act. And so we're talking about when I say it's agnostic, it doesn't matter why you're protesting, the bill applies. It doesn't pick winners and losers.
So another question in regard to the language of the bill. You talked about these international organizations that are organizing protests all over the world, and the fear is those organizations are going to organize protests in Alaska. An organization sitting in some country in Europe that's organizing protests here, I don't see anything in this bill that would allow you to charge that organization with this conduct. The only people that would be charged with are the people that are volunteers with the organization that come to Alaska and then try to block a road, say, but the organization itself isn't liable under the statute, is it?
Yeah, Representative, Senator Klayman. There is a long arm provision in here that allows us to reach out. Now, whether that allows us to reach out internationally, how effective that is for certain groups in certain locations in the world, that's going to have to be done a little research. But certainly, it allows us to access these individuals throughout the United States.
So the theory of somebody sitting in Seattle, Washington, and organizing a protest in Alaska, the theory is that you've got jurisdiction then to go arrest that person in Washington and haul them up to Alaska to answer the charges?
Senator Klayman, that's how our criminal statutes currently work, and we have agreements in place with other states on how that looks when you ask for extradition to your state.
I always understood extradition was a situation in which a person committed a crime in Alaska and then left Alaska, and then they were found in another state, and then there's an extradition process to bring them from, in this case, Washington, back to Alaska based on conduct that occurred in Alaska that the person who was now in Washington had committed a crime in Alaska. Is there a portion of our extradition that now allows us to charge people that never set foot in Alaska for conduct in Alaska?
Senator Klayman, I'm wading into a little bit of unfamiliar territory, but there are several examples of that occurring during my tenure as the Attorney General, and one includes the instance of the Thunderbird Falls murders, where we were able to extradite a young man from the lower 48 who directly encouraged and the murder that occurred. And so, yeah, we were able to bring him to Alaska, where he sat in front of a jury of his peers and was sentenced basically to life.
Please proceed.
I'll ask Parker Patterson here to provide sort of a sectional, if you would like to hear a sectional, Chair Klayman.
Please.
For the record, Parker Patterson, Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, Civil Division. Mr. Chair, I'll do a brief sectional. Okay, so Section 1 amends AS 0220-050A, which relates to airports, and amends the existing statute to prohibit obstruction of runways in general. Section 2 adds new penalties by adding subsections E and F to that provision. And then Section 3 is a conforming amendment that adjusts 0220-060B based on the new penalties that are created by Section 2. Section 4 establishes the civil cause of action for violations of any of the criminal statutes that are created or amended by this provision and sets out a scheme of statutory damages. Section 5 amends the crime of criminal trespass in first degree, amending AS 1146-320B. Section 6 then amends the crime of criminal trespass in second degree, which is 1146-330B. Both of those increase the penalties in certain circumstances, where it creates a substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response. Section 7 is a conforming change to AS 150A. Section 8 makes obstructing a highway by dropping a substance onto the highway a Class C felony, where it creates a substantial risk of physical injury or interferes with emergency response, amending 1161-150C. Section 9 creates the new crime of obstruction of free passage in public places. Important to note there that that section does not apply to the obstruction of free passage in public places authorized by a permit issued by a state agency or municipality or otherwise authorized by law or by the person in charge of the premises. Section 10 amends the crime of obstruction of navigable waters, again increasing that penalty in situations where the conduct creates substantial risk of injury or interferes with emergency response. Section 11 provides prospective application of the criminal offenses, and Section 12 provides for an effective date of July 1, 2024. Thank you.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions related to language in the bill. The first is actually a very small one. It's there on page 5, line 7. You might want to add a comma after July 1st. That period is off-putting, to say the least, because I cannot tell. I think there might be some confusion there. My next question is actually on page 4, line 29, and it says create substantial risk. And I'm hopeful that you might be able to point me to a definition of substantial risks, or if there is a definition in another part of the statute that I may be able to look at to understand what constitutes a substantial risk.
Through the chair, Senator, that's a criminal provision. I might want to not get over my skis and defer to the criminal division on the substantial risk language.
And I see the criminal division about three rows back. Ms. Schroeder, welcome.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. Through the chair to Senator Tobin, substantial risk is a term and a phrase that we use throughout the criminal code, and that would really come down to your jury question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I am not a lawyer, nor do I try to pretend to be one, to understand that, you would say that would come down to discretion, another component in this bill that would be applied with discretion on what creates or what constitutes a substantial risk.
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, there is litigation surrounding that term in other areas of law. So we would look to that when deciding how we were going to charge and whether or not we would bring that particular case before a jury. But ultimately, it would be something that the jury would have to decide.
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions about the brand new crime, the obstruction of free passage.
Hold on just a second. Before you, are there other questions with respect? Don't go anywhere yet. With respect to where Senator Tobin was asking, are there other questions in that Section 10? Because I have a question on Section 10. Physical injury under the criminal code is pretty minor. I sprained my finger. That's physical injury. Why, and I don't know who's the responsible one to ask the question to, but I got three candidates. Why isn't it serious physical injury as opposed to physical injury? Serious physical injury is defined in the criminal code.
Chair Clayman, to be honest, I think when drafting, we were looking at what other obstruction type statutes used. And if you look at the obstruction of highway statute, which is in Section 7, it uses physical injury. And so then that theme was just carried through.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Keel, in a different section of the bill, I wasn't trying to get in front of
you. Not at all.
It seemed like we should stay on the same place.
I appreciate it. We're just going back one section, to Section 9. Oh, I don't know if Ms. Schroeder needs to go. We'll let the executive branch decide, though. a couple of questions about this this new crime that is proposed here. and the first would be on state or municipal land. There was a reference by another member of the committee, but I want to ask the question directly. If you want to do something, if you plan to hold a protest, if you plan to hold a gathering, for that matter, somewhere where there isn't a permit available, and I'll just give you an example. You can get a parade permit from the city and borough of Juneau to block, to obstruct a street. There is no parade permit available, nor is one required, to process down the sidewalk, although I have been parts of processions of hundreds and hundreds of people, rendering the sidewalk functionally impassable and who's not part of the group. So if no permit is available, are people blocking the sidewalk by default obstructing free passage in a public place and guilty of this crime?
Senator Keel, through the chair, you pointed to an interesting issue in that our case law on this issue of assembly allows municipalities to further limit the right to assemble. And so those municipalities that have permitting processes, that's exactly what that permitting process is. It narrows down where time, place, location and manner of that protest. So without a permitting process in place, there would be no, absent state law on the issue or municipal code on the issue. And so I would say that anywhere in the state where you block and intentionally knowingly block and the term of art used in here is a highway, but we know highway under the code is pretty much any pathway, sidewalk, alleyway. I mean, it goes on. There's a list of all these types of things, including ferries and similarly situated entities. And so without a specific permitting process in place, then the laws like this would apply. So an individual who wanted to protest, say, in the entrance to a state park and block access to a trail would fall under this provision that is currently this bill and would fall under the ability to charge them under this bill.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That reply is somewhat troubling. If the city workers wanted to have a picket because contract negotiations were going badly on the sidewalk in front of City Hall, there being no permit available, their picket automatically makes them guilty of the crime. That concerns me. Let's move on then to the notion.
Senator Kill, oh, please. Through the chair, that's currently the law. We're not changing that definition. That's currently a violation of the law.
So wouldn't this bill make the law violation a higher penalty, and the consequences of violating the law would change under this bill, although what is legal and illegal wouldn't change?
Yes, Senator Klayman, this does exactly that. It heightens the penalties.
Senator Keel's still going. I just
thank you.
Brief clarification.
Yeah. So the heightened penalty, instead of a violation, it would be a crime. So that's troubling. This new crime, the proposed obstruction of free passage in public places, would then apply that to any piece of municipal land where there happens to be a trail. Or for that matter, state land where there's, I don't know, historic trail. So moving then to the private property portions of this public places notion, what is necessary for the person in charge of the premises to authorize the activity and render it non-criminal?
We're talking about a private entity. I'm not sure what process they would go through to allow people to protest on their property. I'm assuming if that individual called the police and said, these people are illegally on my property, please remove them, they would not have that permission. Otherwise, if the owner didn't report it, there would be no reason for law enforcement to be involved.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may. So in this case, no request to leave, no notice to quit, no trespass notice would be necessary. They would just be, we've got buildings with plazas underneath them. They're private property, but they're obviously generally open to the public. Those folks would be guilty of this crime.
Senator Kill, through the chair, the way that the current wording of our statutes are is person enters or remains unlawfully on land, right? And then both of those, whether it deals with premises or dwellings, there's a heightened penalty currently for dwellings, obviously, because that's where we live, that's where our families live. But it requires a person to remain unlawfully on land, which means if they're asked to leave and they do not leave, they are in violation of trespass.
Mr. Chairman, I've missed something. Can you point me to that language in the proposed obstruction of free passage in public places crime?
Senator Kill, through the chair, that is part of our current criminal trespass code. It might not read that way in our bill because we're just making an addition to the penalties that could occur if. So we have two areas where there's currently criminal trespass, as I described. One dwelling, one premises. Premises would be like a business or so on, where we see that kind of activity more often. The other one is a more, kind of our sanctuary, our homes, our dwellings. And what this bill does is it creates, if there is a substantial interference with a person's ability to access a building that reading in the wrong place, with knowingly creates a substantial risk of physical injury to another person or interferes with emergency personnel. That's when our current criminals trespass.
I want to hold back just a second because I understand Senator Keel's asking about Section 9 of the bill.
Yeah.
And he's not asking about the criminal trespass section. You're making reference to the sections of the bill relating to criminal trespass, which is 1146, 320, and 330. And when I'm looking in Section 9, there's no reference at all to the criminal trespass section in Section 9. You're only referencing AS 0220050 and AS 1161150, and then the 3805128.
Senator Klayman, I understood the question to be on private property, which is our criminal trespass, if it's private property. The Section 9 deals with public places. So it'd be like obstructing the ability of somebody to enter the museum because they disagree with the art or the gallery that's being displayed.
Sure, for me. I appreciate that is what we're talking about. And as I look at the Title 11 definition of public places, it doesn't require that it be public property by any stretch. Facility, schools, let's see, places of amusement or business, lobbies and other portions of apartment houses, a place to which the public or a substantial group of persons has access. So if we talk about a plaza and a commercial building, I think, am I incorrect that we have a public place to which this proposed new crime applies?
Senator Kill, through the chair, yes, if there is an obstruction of entry into that place, that's exactly right. So one is trespass, simply being on the premises contrary to the owner of that property wanting them there. And this one that you're talking about in Section 9, that is if they prevent people from entering a store, say they're outside the store and they're preventing people from entering the store because they disagree with a medicine that store sells or whatever the case may be, that would then be a violation of obstruction of free passage in public places.
Well, respectfully, Mr. Chairman, as I read Section 9 in conjunction with the other definitions in Title 11, you can block the steps to a plaza. You don't have to block access to the building or entry, in fact, to the business. So the language there, right, doesn't require you get to a misdemeanor if you interfere with access to a place that renders government services. But you got to be misdemeanor if it's hard to get in the public place. And you don't require notice by the owner of the place that you're supposed to leave. You're just guilty. So very problematic drafting in terms of the incredible vagueness and difficulty of any citizen in knowing when they're in violation of this proposed new criminal law.
Senator Gill, through the chair, may I respond?
Absolutely.
So the statute, the bill requires knowingly. You have to knowingly be in violation of this. So you're knowingly blocking passage to keep people from entering a certain place, whether that's just to pass on the trail or pass into the Museum of Art or whatever the case may be. You knowingly are preventing people from passing. So there, I think, is sort of a notice there in that they have to be willfully obstructing people from passing by.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I appreciate the discretion you've given to ask a series of questions. Again, the question wasn't whether you knew you were blocking. The question was whether you knew that you weren't authorized to be there when the general public is authorized to be there. So that's kind of the issue there. We don't, to my knowledge, have a definition of what it means to be authorized by the person in charge of the premises.
Let me just ask a hypothetical question about Section 9. You've got we'll use the store, the example, and somebody's protesting prescriptions that are sold in the store, and the store has two entrances, one that's sort of the main entrance, it's the street, it's got lots of doors and steps going up to the, and then over to the side there's another door that isn't particularly well known, but it's always open and many people go in and out of that door as well. There's a protest and there's no permits or anything else. They they said the protest, and the protest is such that the front steps are filled with people, and although somebody, they're not blocking anyone from going in for whatever reason, somebody doesn't feel comfortable walking through the group, but their door on the side is always available. Would that person be creating a crime under this definition?
Senator Klayman, I think the answer to your question in both scenarios, whether you try to enter the front or the side, there is no crime under this bill, because you have to create, you have to knowingly create an impassable or passable only with unreasonable inconvenience, right? So if I have to climb a tree and then jump over the protesters, that's probably unreasonable. But if I have to simply say, excuse me, I'm entering the building, and then you walk through and they don't try to stop you, that is not a violation of this bill.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to follow up on that, because we've had conversations about this, and you've mentioned this before, that if there's an alternative route, then it wouldn't be a crime under this bill, is the blockage of that entrance. Can you point to me where that pertains in this statute or in other statutes, that if there's an alternative route, you would not be held accountable under this legislation?
It's Senator Tobin, through the chair, it's directly in the language. Knowingly renders a public place impassable or passable only with unreasonable inconvenience or hazard. So if there is not an unreasonable alternative route, then you'd probably not be in violation of this bill.
I do not believe that is clear, and so I would think that a potential amendment would be to clarify that, as that is not the way that I necessarily understood that to be. It does not mention that there is an alternative pathway, whether that's known to you or to other individuals. If the person is trying to enter into the state building and does not know that they can use any of the other access points, however, those are only accessible through key card, which would make your protest in front of this Capitol building, making the building rendered impassable to all other public entities except for individuals with key cards, there is some ambiguity there that I think is just provides a lack of clarity.
Senator Tobin, through the chair, is that a question or a comment? Okay.
All right. I don't see any other questions from the committee. I had a question turning to Section 4. Question is, from your application of the statute, where it reads a person who obstructs access in violation of these various statutes is strictly liable in a civil action, does there need to be a conviction for the crime before somebody can sue the person civilly?
Senator Klayman, I think the there has to be knowingly, right? Because that's what all the criminal statutes require, knowingly. And I think there would need to be, I think it's going to be akin, and I'm going to probably turn this over to my lifeline of Casey, but I'm thinking about civil liability in like a murder case, for example, where the classic one is, I mean, we're going to go back to O.J. Simpson, where he was acquitted, but still was civilly liable for the murder. And so I don't know if that could occur in this instance, but I will certainly ask Casey if she could elucidate on that point.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division. Mr. Chairman, if you could repeat your question. I'm sorry, this was a civil section and I tuned out.
It's a civil section that I when he called you up, I thought, we're going to get Schroeder talking civil liability. That's usually not her expertise. I mean, the question I have is in section 4. There's a lawsuit against Mr. Smith because they violated obstruction of highways. And they sue and say he violated, but it turns out, let's even go to the O.J. Simpson example, Mr. Smith was criminally prosecuted and was found not guilty. Not even a dismissal, a jury trial, not guilty. You know, you've got the O.J. Simpson scenario. Is that can somebody still sue Mr. Smith for violating one for the violation?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that they could, because the burden of proof is different. So the criminal burden of proof, as this committee knows, is beyond a reasonable doubt, and the burden of proof for the civil liability would be preponderance of the evidence. So I do believe that the civil case could potentially still go forward. And I'd ask Mr. Patterson to elaborate on anything that I may have missed.
Yeah, Parker Patterson for the record, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I agree with that. That's exactly right. It does not say a conviction. It says in violation of these. So what you would end up doing at a civil case is proving by a preponderance of the evidence the elements of the criminal violation. Similar, yes, to the O.J. Simpson example.
Okay. Thank you. Broad question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate clearing that up. That was my first question. So always good when the chair takes one for you. The question, I guess, has to do with the notion of civil liability for someone suffering only nominal damages. That's one of those terms that I don't think we have a statutory definition for. But if I have a clinic with a dozen employees and a protest stops a patient from getting to their appointment at the clinic, do all dozen employees have a claim to nominal damages of $10,000 each?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, first of all, I would mention that on page 3, starting at line 1, we do have a definition of nominal damages. And to answer your question, yes, each of those employees who was obstructed would have an individual cause of action under this provision.
So, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is a pretty significant, I think, expansion of our tort law, if I understand it correctly. And this is not my area of expertise by any stretch. But this is strict liability. It's joint and several liability. It's vicarious liability. Do we have anything else to which that sort of access to recovery in court applies in our state?
Through the chair, Parker Patterson again for the record, Senator. It's actually quite common when you have a tort that's based on a violation of a criminal law. That's what they call negligence per se. And in a negligence per se scenario, you have strict liability. That's actually a well-known common law tort law doctrine. So this is really just following what the general rule already is.
Senator Keel?
Okay, thank you. That's helpful to know that we have strict vicarious joint and several liability in other places.
Do those, on that same topic, do those provisions include a damage schedule such as appears in Section 4? Are those more open-ended?
Mr. Chair, no. This damages, statutory damages provision is fairly unique. Normally, of course, in a tort law case, you have compensatory damages and punitive damages. This creates a separate schedule of statutory damages. Mm-hmm.
Would they still owe the other two types of damages?
Mr. Chair, yes. You will see in on page 2, right, line 8, in addition to other civil damages and criminal penalties provided by law, a person who obstructs is strictly liable for the following for each incident. So, yes.
So, thank you. That I guess
I'm going to make this the last question because we have people waiting to publicly testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess, I was looking at this and sort of thinking it would make a California ambulance chaser lawyer drool. The question was going to be encouraging. It's at line 20. And Mr. Attorney General, you spoke about someone organizing a protest from afar or a big organization. But if someone walks by and says, way to go, guys, do they have this type of liability too? Are they encouraged sufficient to be named in the suit here?
Senator Keel, through the chair, that's a great question. And the answer is no. If you're simply encouraging people, you agree with the protest, you say, yeah, I agree with this, whatever they're protesting. If that's all they're doing, then no, they're not in violation of this law. There's some case law on the record in the sort of same arena, and basically you would have to show that they were encouraging the protesters to break this law, saying, hey, I agree with you waving those flags, but why don't you go somewhere where there's damage could be done? How about the Seward Highway? That kind of encouragement could fall under the gambit of this law.
Mr. Chairman, if we could get a citation to that case law, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, that Senator Keel, through the chair, that's Rice v. Paladin Entertainment. That was a case in regards to a book on how to commit a murder and whether that publisher could be liable for a murder that actually occurred.
What court rendered that decision?
Mr. Chair, that's the Fourth Circuit. It's a federal case.
We're not in the Fourth Circuit, though.
No.
No, there's, Mr. Chair, I was not able to find one in the Ninth Circuit directly on point.
Not in from the Alaska Supreme Court either?
Not on this specific narrow question, no.
So don't go anywhere. Stay put. We are going to go to public testimony now because we have people that have been waiting. If we have time, we will continue the questions. We're going to go ahead and open public testimony on Senate Bill 255. I'll first ask, we're open for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to provide public testimony? Hearing and seeing no one, we're going to go online. The first person in line is Amanda Pineda. Ms. Pineda, if you would identify yourself for the record, we limit public testimony to 2 minutes per person. And please proceed.
Hi, my name is Amanda Pineda, and I am a registered voter. I work, and I vehemently oppose this bill. I think that it is a huge infringement on my First Amendment right to freedom of speech and freedom to assemble. I am really disheartened to see that it has advanced to the Judiciary Committee. It just violates my First Amendment right to freedom of speech and my right to assemble. As we've seen, this bill needs more definition around a lot of terminology in it. I think it's very problematic, and I really, really oppose this bill as a constituent, as a voter, as a taxpayer. I think that it should not be passed or advanced at all. I really don't think so. Please stop this bill from advancing to protect the most fundamental rights of Alaskans.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next in the queue, Manika Thiru, and if I've mispronounced your name, please forgive me and you can correct me. Please identify yourself and please.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. My name is Manika Thiru, and I live in East Anchorage. I'm calling on behalf of myself. I would also like to express my opposition to this bill by adding in the section around civil liability and also changing the classification to of a first-degree criminal trespass to a felony. I believe that this bill has a very specific goal of frightening people who would otherwise participate in protests to discourage expressions of dissent or to ask people to only protest in ways that are quote-unquote acceptable to the governor. Participating in protests is part of my First Amendment rights and has often historically been the only way that people have been able to make themselves heard when a government or institution has otherwise ignored them. I've personally participated in many protests and will continue to do so as Alaskan, and I ask that this committee please stop this bill from advancing, as it seems to me to be very clearly intending to discourage Alaskans from exercising their First Amendment rights. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions from the committee. Next is Nithya Thiru.
Hi, my name is Nithya Thiru. I'm a resident of East Anchorage, and I'm representing myself. I'm calling in today in strong opposition of SB 255. This bill would infringe upon our First Amendment rights to assemble. For those who don't seem to understand why, I'd like to provide a short history lesson. When civil rights activists marched in Selma across Edmund Pettus Bridge, they blocked the roadway necessarily in order to gain the attention of the nation. Assembling and protesting in roadways is a critical tool that American communities have historically used to push our governments to do better when our government does not listen. Under this bill, community members who choose to carry on the legacy of these powerful civil rights activists, including leaders like John Lewis, would be further criminalized and harshly penalized simply for stepping out into the street to make their voices heard. This bill is a dangerous silencing of dissent that threatens the very foundation of our democracy. I urge you to oppose SB 255. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next is Casey Kasort.
Thank you. My name is Casey Kasort, and I'm calling on behalf of myself as a Fairbanks resident. I'm opposed to SB 255. I do not believe that creating more reasons to arrest Alaskans for exercising our fundamental right to protest is the right move. I have participated in dozens of peaceful protest events in Fairbanks, from rallies, pickets, marches, art displays, parades, banner drops. I've also been counter-protested and witnessed protest actions that I vehemently disagree with. What I have never done, however, is wish for the people I disagree with to be arrested or fined for speaking up. I think it's cowardly and tyrannical for Governor Dunleavy and his team to introduce a bill that cracks down on political dissent in public spaces as a sitting politician. Protest is, at its core, intended to disrupt, and criminalizing free speech only serves to threaten people who are engaging in legitimate political processes. It's okay for us to disagree on a lot of things, but this bill cracks down on open conversations and gatherings in public spaces and is deeply undemocratic and completely unacceptable. Please do not hear this bill again or move it out of committee. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next in the queue is Serene O'Hara Jolly. And if you're affiliated with any organization, please identify that group.
Yes, Chair Clayman and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Planned Parenthood Alliance advocates strongly opposes SB.
You need to identify yourself too, please.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I'm Serene Rose O'Hara Jolly, Alaska State Director. Planned Parenthood Alliance advocates strongly opposes SB 255, a bill that would criminalize Alaskans who exercise their freedom of speech and assembly. The bill's language is so broad that it renders constitutionally protected speech illegal, and so vague that those who wish to follow or enforce the law are unclear as to the legislation's scope. SB 255 would create the new crime of obstruction of free passage in public places, a provision that is not only constitutionally problematic, but also deeply concerning in its potential to stifle lawful speech and protest. The bill's language is overly broad and lacks exceptions for lawful activities, making it a clear violation of the First Amendment. The vague language of this bill is an attempt to crack down on Alaskans' ability to protest, demonstrate, and freely assemble. This bill would hold individuals liable for damages for associating with a protest in almost any way. Such broad language would allow any person to be held liable for sharing information about a protest on social media. The penalties and civil liability provisions under this bill are unreasonable. Individuals could be fined $10,000 to $500,000 for a violation. This is simply egregious, and this bill would allow any person anywhere in the world to be dragged into an Alaskan court for nothing more than encouraging a protest. Law enforcement can apply vague and overly broad laws selectively against parties engaged in disfavored speech. There is no way for the state to neutrally apply this bill. Moreover, new obstruction of free passage crimes appear to criminalize homelessness in public spaces, and could be weaponized by law enforcement.
You're at the two-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Yep, please oppose SB 255. Thank you for your time, and sorry I forgot to introduce myself at the start.
It's okay. Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next in the queue is Alma Abaza.
Hi, my name is Alma Abaza, and I'm a resident of Anchorage, and I'm representing myself today. I am testifying against SB 255. Frankly, I think it's a thinly veiled attempt at suppressing freedom of speech and Alaskans' right to assemble. Listening to your discussion today, it is clear to me that there is no real need to implement such an undemocratic bill. Please stop this bill from advancing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next is Salem Houck.
My name is Salim Houck. I am a resident of Juneau, and I am testifying on behalf of myself in opposition to SB 255. Standing up for what you believe in is an important Alaskan value, and this bill would restrict Alaskans' ability to do that. As far as I'm aware, there are not external groups organizing protests in Alaska. The protests that occur here are organized by Alaskans concerned about issues facing our communities. Growing up in Juneau, a powerful part of my education was being able to participate in community protests. In 2018, after a school shooting in Parkland, Florida, killed 17 people, my classmates at Juneau Douglas High School decided we needed to do something to try and stop something like that from happening in Alaska. Our whole lives we had experienced active school shooter drills, lockdowns, and missed days because of school shooting threats and bomb threats. We decided to do a walkout and march from our high school to the Capitol to make our elected officials aware of our grief and fear that we felt about the issue of school shootings. This experience helped us feel like we had an ability to do something about an issue that was incredibly overwhelming and much larger than any of us. Under SB 255, it is unclear if the hundreds of young people who stood up for our right to go to school without fear of being shot or murdered could have faced legal repercussions for participating in that protest. The right to freedom of speech and assembly is an essential pillar of democracy, and to threaten that right is an un-American and un-Alaskan thing to do. That is why I urge you not to pass this bill out of committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next is Sonia Kumar.
Hi, my name is Sonia Kumar, and I'm a resident of Juneau, Alaska, and I'm representing myself. I am testifying today in strong opposition of SB 255 because it violates my First Amendment freedom of speech right and my right to assemble. From my understanding, this bill attempts to prohibit public protest and criminalize Alaskans who are exercising their right to freedom of speech. It seems like this bill is also trying to eliminate the part of the First Amendment that states that we have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. By taking away our right to protest, you are taking away our right to air our grievances about our government. This seems like one of the foundational aspects of a fascist state. Someone even mentioned earlier in the discussion that the events being seen in the lower 48 have not been seen in Alaska. So why are we even debating this? Are the authors of the bill so threatened by our right to protest that they are making up fake scenarios that aren't even an issue in Alaska? I have lived in various parts of Alaska for 7 years, and I've never experienced a protest-based roadblock on the Seward, Glen, or even highways. But I have experienced traffic from RVs, tourists, accidents, construction, and even wildlife, but never protests. Please vote no on SB 255.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Next in the queue, it's rare we get to say this. I call on Santa Claus.
Hello, Chairman Clayman and members. I'm Santa Claus, former Mayor Pro Tem of North Pole, but also a former Special Assistant to the Deputy Police Commissioner of New York City, Chief of Safety and Security, U.S. Fort Giants Port Authority, and member of FEMA's National Defense Executive Reserve, while Director of the Terrorism Research and Communication Center. I'm testifying in opposition to SB 255 because, as the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Alaska, emphasizes, it violates my First Amendment freedom of speech and my right to assemble freely in public places. The ACLU notes that SB 255 would create the new crime of obstruction of free passage in public places, which is constitutionally problematic, and the language would capture a broad range of activity and contains no exceptions for lawful speech and protest, and proposes criminal consequences for everything from protests to homelessness. Again, as ACLU Alaska points out, the First Amendment of our Constitution prohibits any laws that abridge freedom of speech, interfere with the right to peaceably assemble, or prohibit citizens from petitioning for a governmental redress of grievances. The First Amendment was adopted into the U.S. Bill of Rights in 1791. Furthermore, the Supreme Court has interpreted the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment as protecting the rights in the First Amendment from interference by state governments, and that includes Alaska. Alaska's Constitution Declaration of Rights in Article 1, Section 5 reads, every person may freely speak, write, and publish on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right. Section 6 reads, the right of people to peacefully to assemble and to petition the government shall never be abridged. Again, I respectfully request that you oppose Senate Bill 255. Thank you so much for letting us all testify today.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Thank you for calling in from North Pole. Next in the queue is Laura Bonner. If you want to identify yourself, please proceed.
Hi, my name's Laura Bonner, and I live in Anchorage, and I'm speaking for myself. I adamantly oppose Senate Bill 255. It makes it a crime to peacefully assemble, violating the U.S. constitutional right. It would become a crime to exercise my freedom of speech or to petition the government, like in front of, like a group of people on the sidewalk in front of the building of Senator Murkowski's office. Public spaces are not well defined in this bill, and who makes that decision if it's a crime? The building owner, the building security. I've participated in many protests, informational pickets, marches, gatherings in the plaza in front of the LIO and political campaign sign waving on the sidewalk. And none of these were paramedics or other emergency responders impeded. There was always ingress and egress to the buildings. Do not criminalize protesting or informational and criminalizing my freedom of speech and my right to peacefully assemble. Please don't move this, leave this, don't pass this bill out of committee. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Ms. Bonner is the last person in the online queue, and I'm looking around the room. I don't see anyone that wasn't here before when I called for folks in the room to testify, so I'm going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 255. Are there further questions for Mr. Taylor or any of his colleagues?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Keel.
I guess, given the public testimony, I'll ask the constitutional question. Alaska's Constitution says the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government shall never be abridged. When we look at the proposed Section 9, there doesn't need to be violence or damage or any such thing for an assembly to be criminal behavior. There has to be unreasonable inconvenience. How do you square that with the Constitution?
Senator Keel, through the chair, I think if you read Article 1, that gets at the fact that we have a constitutional right to move about the state. That if I wanted to take my family to look at a controversial exhibit at the MOA or view a controversial play at the Museum of Art, at the auditorium, I should have ability to take my family and walk peaceably to that. I shouldn't have to deal with a bunch of people blocking my passage and preventing my family from viewing those things. So the one thing that I'd stress after listening to those public comments is that this doesn't change the law as it deals with obstruction of highways, doesn't change the law as it's dealing with obstruction of airports. It does increase the penalties for those. The only new part of in new violation would be the obstruction of public place. And I think if you ask most people, including the people that called in, if they thought that they would have a right just to walk freely into Planned Parenthood, for example, they would say, of course I do. That's part of my constitutional rights. Well, not under the law currently in Alaska. You could block passage into that institution or any other organization. If you disagreed with what they were doing, you could act in a threatening, you know, once you start acting in a threatening manner, that does allow law enforcement maybe to take action. But what we're trying to prevent here is from that escalation to occur, that we think that if the Taylor family wants to go see an art exhibit, they should be able to walk into the Museum of Art and not face a mob of people trying to prevent them from entering.
Senator Keel, follow up?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The question, I think, of what constitutes unreasonable inconvenience is a different one than threatening mobs or mobs that prevent access. And just by way of comment, Mr. Chairman, the civil portions of the bill create perhaps the most chilling piece of all. I'm a little surprised to hear Planned Parenthood oppose it. They could fund their clinics on suing protesters with this. They could take people with differences of principle and bankrupt them. Certainly, in years past, when we've had folks on February 23rd on the steps of this building carrying rifles chambered in 223, thus the date, I have had constituents terrified. Absolutely terrified to come anywhere near the building. The notion that any one of those folks could go file a suit and cause those folks to have to go hire a lawyer, shell out a whole bunch of money, even just to get the case dismissed, because of an action of this legislature with this bill, bothers me very much.
That was comment and not question, so you're off the hook. Senator Tobin, did you want to add it? I will just make a couple of comments. One is that the example, Mr. Taylor, that you bring up about Planned Parenthood, I mean, the reality at Planned Parenthood clinics is not about protests, it's about safety. And people that are going to Planned Parenthood clinics for medical treatment, that is their, under our Constitution, their constitutional right to get that medical treatment, whatever it may be at that clinic, those clinics routinely have security folks because people are literally threatened by going to that clinic. And that's always been troubling to me. The other interesting part is that kind of the pitch you make is, well, look at the world and look at these big protests and all these problems. And it wasn't the executive branch wasn't part of it. We had a ledge council meeting sometime in the last 2 or 3 months, and the question came up about here in the Capitol, should we start screening folks for weapons? And it's interesting because here just on 4th Street, if I want to walk in the court building, I get screened for weapons. But here in the Capitol, we don't get screened for weapons. And there was a debate on Ledge Council, and the majority of Ledge Council didn't want to have that screening for weapons because the feeling there was it hasn't been a problem yet. We don't want to infringe on Alaskans' constitutional rights. And I appreciate kind of that sense of the majority of the Ledge Council that they didn't want to have that infringement of rights, although I walk into federal buildings all over the country and I get screened for weapons, and I have walked into several state capitals and been screened for weapons, and I think I kind of appreciate the recognition, but I also worry that we're one person away from really regretting that decision. But that's about people shooting people or injuring people. And here, you know, the pitch that you're making and your administration is making is that threat here in Alaska of these protests is so great that we need to change existing law, increase penalties. And I really, I mean, I've walked through lots of protests, and now as an elected official, I've walked through protests where people are telling me they don't really like my perspective on some of these things. And sometimes they voice those in pretty strong terms. And I can tell you walking through those can be very uncomfortable. But I still have a hard time seeing that we're at that place that you're describing in the lower 48 states, that it's a big issue today. So I appreciate the perspective. That's common, doesn't require a response. We have 2 minutes. Any further comments or responses? All right. Well, I will give you a last. I'll give you the last 2 minutes. You don't have to respond to what I said or anybody else, but you can have the last couple.
Senator Klayman, I think that's the just listening to what you had to say. I think is the exact sort of balancing that we try to balancing of these rights and how do they weigh in. And so when this bill sort of in its beginning, it was not only that we were seeing this throughout the lower 48 and throughout Europe, but we also recognize that Alaska is uniquely at harm. It could be harmed by this because of the limitations we have on our roadways, limitations we have on our ports. I mean, just a few days of obstruction to the Kenai could empty the shelf, the grocery shelves in Kenai. That's how important our roads are in Alaska. There's no just getting off on this turnpike and taking a highway for 4 or 5 miles and then getting back on the road. That doesn't exist. That ability doesn't occur in Alaska. And so when looked at what's going on and what the harm could be to Alaskans, that was the impetus behind this bill. I think it is an attempt to balance those interests. And there's a policy disagreement. You could easily disagree with how we balance those or whether the civil penalties are really necessary. Those are all policy calls that the legislature can make, but this is sort of how we envisioned it, and this is why it's been presented in the form that it's been presented. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to listen to your questions and concerns, and thank you.
Very much. We will hold this bill for further review. And we will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Friday, April 12th at 1:30. We will stand adjourned. The time is 2:59 p.m.